80%. Like 80% of your potential impact is just lost before a reader even finishes your first sentence.
It's terrifying, honestly.
Right. The internet has literally never been louder, and the battle for attention has never been more, well, ruthless. So welcome to the Pidcot Podcast. I am your host, Bill Pidcot, and I am absolutely thrilled to be here today.
And I am Annabelle Pidcot. So excited to be co-hosting this with you today. Great to be here.
We have an incredibly detailed deep dive for you today, unpacking the exact mechanics of how to make your writing just impossible to ignore.
Yeah, and it is a phenomenal topic. And what we are looking at today goes way beyond, you know, basic grammar. We are digging into the cognitive psychology of the reader, the architectural structure of a winning article, and the algorithmic strategies that actually surface your work in a really crowded digital landscape. Mm-hmm. We are omitting absolutely nothing. Today is all about exhaustive depth.
Exactly. And the insights we are breaking down today are pulled directly from the bestseller ebooks on our ebook store. These are the advanced frameworks that the top creators are using right now.
They really are.
So to really master this, you need to visit www.pidcot.com/books to download these resources for yourself. Trust me, you want these strategies in your arsenal. Now, looking directly at you, our amazing listener, subscribe to our channel if you haven't, activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. We appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating to propel this podcast to help others too.
Absolutely. Our mission today is to give you the complete blueprint. We are going to deconstruct the mechanisms behind successful writing so you understand exactly why certain frameworks work, not just what they are.
Yeah, the why is so important.
Right. By the end of this deep dive, you will know how to turn a static article into a highly tuned magnet for the exact readers you want to reach.
Okay, let's unpack this. Yeah. We have to start with the foundational real estate. Because, like, before we analyze sentence structure or psychological triggers, we have to establish where your writing actually lives. The Pidcot analysis hits us with a crucial starting principle, which is tip number one. Publishing on your own domain is essential. You simply cannot build a massive, durable online presence on rented land.
Which is a reality check that, frankly, many creators avoid.
Totally.
Social media platforms provide this intoxicating illusion of control. You know, you build a massive following on a network and you naturally feel like you own that audience.
But you really don't.
You don't. The platform owns the audience. They own the distribution and the data. What's fascinating here is that when you host your core content on your own website, you are taking back narrative control.
Right.
You control the user experience from the moment they click, the visual branding, and all the analytics. Your website acts as the central hub, while every other platform...
Like newsletters or social feeds.
Exactly. Those are just the distribution spokes.
But wait, let me push back on that premise for a second. Because isn't it infinitely easier and, frankly, more effective for reach to just post natively on social platforms where the audience already is?
I mean, sure, yeah. Like, platforms are actively penalizing external links right now because they want zero-click engagement. Building a dedicated website requires capital, maintenance, and, you know, pulling teeth to get people off their feeds, like building a beautiful house on someone else's property.
Right, and eventually the landlord changes the locks.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. It is absolutely easier in the short term. Which is exactly why it's a trap. Think of it like building a multi-million dollar business inside a shopping mall where the landlord can just change your rent, hide your storefront, or evict you overnight without warning.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that happens all the time with algorithm updates.
All the time. Yes, the platforms restrict external link reach because they want to keep users on site. But an algorithm update cannot take away a domain you own.
That is such a crucial point. If you build a proprietary ecosystem integrating natural keywords, rich media, and your own comment sections, you create a destination. You are building equity in an asset you actually own rather than doing free labor for a tech giant's algorithm.
Doing free labor. Wow. That distinction between short-term reach and long-term equity is huge. So once you've established that home base, tip number three is about figuring out exactly who you are inviting inside.
Right.
And the advanced approach to audience building here is fascinating. It's not just about knowing their demographics. It's about the concept that the best writers are actually the best listeners.
I love that concept because writing without a hyper-specific audience in mind is just, well, broadcasting into the void.
Yeah, yelling into an empty room.
Exactly. To optimize your writing, you have to move beyond basic personas like, oh, I don't know, 35-year-old manager. You need to understand their psychographics.
What does that mean exactly in this context?
It means asking, what keeps them awake at 2 a.m.? What specific friction do they encounter in their workday? And you don't guess this. You use rigorous listening mechanisms.
Like A-B testing.
A-B testing on your formatting, conducting deep dive surveys, and analyzing exactly which phrases your audience uses when they actually reply to your emails.
Oh, that's so smart. Using their own words back to them.
Yeah.
And here is where the cognitive shift happens for the writer. You have to take all that data and write to one specific person.
Yes.
It's a paradox, but it's entirely true. When you try to talk to everyone, you end up connecting with absolutely no one.
That's so true.
When you write to a single, localized human being, it strips away that artificial, bureaucratic, broadcast tone. Your writing naturally becomes conversational.
It creates intimacy.
Yeah.
And that naturally leads to the next mechanism of connection, which is tip 5, injecting authentic personality, particularly through vulnerability.
Which is hard for a lot of people.
Very hard. But the internet is already flooded with generic, polished, AI-generated expertise. It does not need another flawless guru.
Preach.
The Pitcott material strongly advocates for sharing personal failures as a core strategy for trust building.
Which feels entirely counterintuitive to most professionals.
Yeah.
I mean, we are trained to hide our mistakes, right?
Yep.
We only show the highlight reel. But admitting a failure or like a strategic misstep is what actually builds authority.
Exactly. In psychology, there is a concept called the pratfall effect.
The pratfall effect.
Yeah. It shows that highly competent people become more likable and trusted when they make a mistake or admit a flaw.
Wow. That makes so much sense.
When you share a failure, you trigger the Me Too response in the reader's brain. It proves you have actually been in the trenches. Flawless perfection just triggers skepticism because readers know it's fake.
They can smell it a mile away.
Right. When you admit you struggled to master a concept, the reader immediately feels safe. You shift from a lecturer to a mentor.
So we have the secure domain. We know the exact psychology of the reader we are inviting in. And we are communicating with, like, authentic vulnerability. That brings us to section 2, the actual architecture of attention. How do we make the interior of the content so frictionless that they can't stop reading?
This is the fun part.
It is. And the gateway to all of this, tip 12, is the headline.
The headline is the ultimate bottleneck. The data shows that roughly 80% of your potential impact is lost right at the door if your headline fails to convert.
80%.
People are scrolling at warp speed, so you have fractions of a second to disrupt their pattern.
And the mechanics of that disruption are so specific. We know numbers work better than vague concepts, right? But the specificity is what really drives the cognitive hook. For instance, a headline like, "How I Grew My List by 1,247 Subscribers," completely destroys a generic headline like, "How to Grow Your List."
Because specificity implies empirical data. And data implies truth. The brain processes a specific number, like 1,247, as verifiable evidence, whereas a vague phrase is just processed as marketing fluff.
Yeah, it's just noise.
But engineering that perfect headline requires serious discipline. The text introduces the rule of 10.
Oh, I love this part.
You don't just draft 2 or 3 ideas and pick the best one. You write 10 completely different headlines for every single article.
Which sounds completely exhausting. I'm not going to lie. By headline number 4, my brain usually feels totally empty.
And that cognitive strain is exactly the point. The first 5 headlines you write are going to rely on the availability heuristic.
Which means they're just the easy ones.
Right. They are the most obvious cliche ideas floating at the top of your mind. They are what everyone else would write. When you force yourself to write numbers 6 through 10, you bypass the easy neural pathways.
You have to get creative.
You are forced to look for lateral connections, contrarian angles, and surprising hooks. That is where the alpha is. That's where you find the angle that surprises even you.
Okay, so the headline does its job. The reader clicks. The pattern is interrupted. But then tip 2, the formatting trap. We have all experienced this. You click a great headline, the page loads, and you are hit with a massive, unbroken wall of text.
Oh, it's the worst.
It induces immediate cognitive overload, and you just close a tab without reading a single word. Huh? I do it all the time.
Everyone does. It triggers an instant avoidance response. We have to remember that formatting is not just visual decoration. Formatting is a vital form of communication. When a reader opens your article, their eye performs rapid movements called saccades, looking for safe resting places. White space, bullet points, and clear subheadings provide those resting places.
Formatting is essentially a visual roadmap. You are non-verbally telling the reader, hey, this is organized. It will not drain your mental energy. You are safe to proceed.
Exactly.
And this is doubly important when we talk about viewport constraints. We have to design for mobile first. A beautifully structured short paragraph on a desktop monitor turns into a terrifying wall of text on a smartphone screen.
It's true.
If your formatting isn't responsive, you alienate half your traffic immediately.
Which brings us to the actual structural phrasing inside those short paragraphs. Tip 4. The Pidcot text dives deeply into the grammatical mechanics of active versus passive voice. And this isn't just an arbitrary rule from high school English. It's about the cognitive momentum of the reader.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because passive voice doesn't just sound formal. It literally drains the energy from the room. Imagine reading a business retrospective written entirely in the passive voice. I'm going to use my best robotic bureaucrat voice here.
Let's hear it.
Mistakes were made during the launch phase. The data was analyzed by the team, and a new strategy was implemented.
It is completely devoid of accountability and action.
Right. It puts me to sleep.
It forces the reader's brain to work backward to figure out who actually did what.
Right. Now compare that to the active version. We made mistakes during the launch. Our team analyzed the data and implemented a new strategy. Boom.
Yeah.
It is punchy. It drives forward.
Exactly. In active sentences, the subject performs the action. It mirrors how human beings actually experience the world. Passive voice requires more working memory to decode, which increases cognitive friction. And online, friction is the enemy of retention.
Wow, that's a great way to frame it.
The text offers a brilliant auditing trick, actually. Read your paragraphs aloud. If you find yourself repeatedly stumbling over words like was, were, or been, you are bleeding momentum. Rewrite the sentence so the subject is driving the verb.
Energy is what keeps readers moving down the page. So we've optimized the visual roadmap and the grammatical momentum. The content is tight. But before we get into how to make Google fall in love with your writing, head over to www.pidcot.com, subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
Awesome. So the content is tight, but how do we get the algorithms to actually trust and surface this masterpiece? We are operating in the 2026 search landscape, which is fundamentally different than it was even 2 years ago.
It really is.
The landscape has been flooded by large language models generating infinite oceans of acceptable average information. To counteract this, Google and other search engines have heavily prioritized EEAT signals. That stands for experience, expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. That's tip 10.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a second, though.
Go for it.
With AI algorithms capable of synthesizing the entirety of human knowledge in seconds, does a search engine actually care about my human background?
Like,
can't an AI just simulate authoritative writing?
It can simulate the tone of authority, sure, but it cannot simulate verifiable real-world experience. And that is exactly what the algorithms are hunting for now.
Oh, I see.
They use natural language processing to look for semantic proof that a human being actually lived through what they are writing about. AI hallucinates facts, but it cannot hallucinate a 10-year digital footprint of credible case studies.
Right, because that takes actual time and living.
You need to provide hyper-specific metrics, transparent author bios, and links to your primary research. When you look at authoritative platforms like www.pidcot.com, for example, you see a masterclass in how to host content that constantly reinforces these trust signals over time. Trust is built through years of verifiable consistency, and it can be shattered by a single misleading claim.
You really have to protect your digital reputation fiercely. And part of maintaining that authority is proving that you are actively engaged with the current landscape. You can't just publish evergreen guides in a vacuum. You have to track industry chatter and stay trend savvy. That's tip 8.
But here is the brilliantly contrarian strategy the Pidcot source outlines. When a new trend spikes in an industry, the immediate instinct of most creators is to rush in and agree with the consensus to catch the traffic wave.
Yeah, FOMO.
Exactly. They repeat the exact same talking points as everyone else.
Which just makes you white noise.
Precisely. The alpha lies in disagreeing with the trend. When everyone is looking left, the most authoritative writers look right and ask, what is missing from this conversation? What is the unseen risk here?
I love that.
Contrarian thinking is the ultimate pattern interrupt. It forces the reader to stop scrolling because you are challenging their assumptions.
That is such a powerful framework. But balancing that kind of timely contrarian reaction with the deep evergreen foundational guides we talked about earlier sounds like a logistical nightmare. Decision fatigue is a real threat to consistency.
Which is why the implementation of a rigorous content calendar is non-negotiable. Tip 11. This is the mechanism that separates amateurs who rely on inspiration from professionals who rely on systems.
Yes, the blank page panic. Waking up on a Tuesday morning, staring at a blinking cursor and asking yourself, what should I write today? That is a recipe for burnout.
Complete burnout.
The most prolific writers eliminate that decision fatigue completely by separating the executive function of planning from the creative function of writing.
Exactly. They spend an hour on Sunday evening doing all the strategic planning. They map out the contrarian takes, the evergreen pieces, the promotional posts.
So they know exactly what's coming.
Right. Whether they use a spreadsheet, Notion, or a whiteboard doesn't really matter. The calendar is a binding contract. When Tuesday morning comes, there is no decision to make. The cognitive load of what to write is zero. You simply execute the blueprint. Intentionality scales, random bursts of inspiration do not.
Wow. So the system is running, the draft is written, it's active, it's visually appealing. But the raw execution is never the final product. We have to move to section 4, the final polish and amplification. Tip 7 makes a profound point here. Mm-hmm. Writing is just typing. Revising is where the actual writing happens.
And the most crucial tool for revision isn't a software program. It's the psychological mechanism of distance. The Pidcot analysis emphasizes waiting at least 24 hours before editing a draft.
The distance trick. Uh-huh. I absolutely swear by this. When you try to edit something immediately after writing it, you are effectively blind to your own mistakes.
Because your brain's predictive text function is working against you. When you just wrote a paragraph, your brain knows exactly what you intended to say. So as your eyes scan the screen, your brain literally autofills missing words and glosses over awkward phrasing.
It's like you can't even see the typos.
You can't. But when you sleep on it and return 24 hours later, that predictive model has decayed. You suddenly possess the perspective of a stranger. You see the words that are actually on the screen, not the ones in your head.
That is so true. And while we are talking about editing tools, we have to acknowledge the absolute limitations of automated grammar checkers. Yes, they will catch a dangling modifier or misspelled word, but they are entirely deaf to human cadence.
I completely.
They will proudly tell you a paragraph is grammatically flawless, completely ignoring the fact that it sounds like a tax manual. You have to read your work out loud. Your ear will catch the clunky rhythm long before the software does.
Once the rhythm is perfectly tuned and human, you cannot afford to let the article sit in obscurity. We have to discuss tip 9, distribution. Publishing is only half the job. You have to syndicate the work to directories, submit to industry newsletters, and relentlessly repurpose the core ideas.
It is genuinely tragic when a creator spends 20 hours researching and writing a life-changing article, hits publish, gets 50 views, and then just abandons it.
It hurts to even think about.
You have to dismantle that core article and rebuild it for different contexts. Extract the statistics and turn them into an infographic. Take the contrarian argument and turn it into a provocative short-form video.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, effective distribution is fundamentally an act of generosity. It's not about spamming your links. It's about putting your solutions directly in front of the people who desperately need them in the formats they prefer to consume.
That's a great mindset shift.
The internet rewards collaborative generosity. You share other people's work, you guest post, you build relationships. It is a compounding network, not a zero-sum game.
Generosity is the perfect framing. And that philosophy of generosity leads us directly to the final mechanism of the deep dive, tip 6. Guiding the reader with an optimized call to action. So what does this all mean for the end of your article? It means you cannot just drop a brilliant insight and then abruptly end the page, leaving the reader stranded.
No, you can't. It would be like having an incredibly deep, moving conversation with someone at a coffee shop and then just standing up and walking out the door without saying goodbye.
Huh. That would be so weird.
Right. An article without a strategic call to action leaves the cognitive loop open in a frustrating way. You have built all this trust, now you must guide the reader to the next logical step.
And just like with the headlines we discussed earlier, the psychology of the CTA relies on extreme specificity and lowering friction. A generic button that says click here or subscribe carries high cognitive friction because the outcome is ambiguous.
Very ambiguous.
But a micro commitment like download this 5-page SEO checklist or join 10,000 other creators provides exact parameters. The CTA is the structural bridge that transforms a one-time anonymous reader into a long-term member of your ecosystem.
It solidifies the relationship completely. And when we synthesize all of these exhaustive mechanics, the domain ownership, the active voice, the contrarian trends, the specific CTAs, the core philosophy underlying this entire Pitcott source reveals itself.
Nice.
The creators who actually win the long game aren't necessarily the ones born with the most raw, poetic talent. They're the most structurally consistent, they're the most generous with their hard-won knowledge, and above all, they're the most authentically human. Which leaves us with a final provocative challenge for you to ponder. How are you going to show up with genuine vulnerability for your audience today? What unique contrarian perspective are you currently holding back that your specific readers desperately need to hear?
Wow.